Hey everyone, welcome to Recovery Rocks. This episode is sponsored by the folks at Sour Humanoid Vinegar.
And Sour
when I say the folks, I mean my partner who just started this amazing vinegar brand. Sour Humanoid is designed for cooking, created by a New York City sommelier who got sober after working at Michelin-starred restaurants and curating award-winning wine lists. This vinegar is an excellent way to make any meal special with very little effort. Check out some of the easy recipes at sourhumanoid.com. And we've had Nick on an episode before. He's, you know, a fellow sober entrepreneur, and we're excited to have Sour Humanoid sponsor this episode.
It's an amazing story, and I will give a brief testimonial just because I don't cook, but I have sent Sour Humanoid gift packs as gifts over the holidays to a couple of my friends who are big cooks, and it got rave reviews. So user tested, customer tested, and all thumbs up.
What's up, you guys? It's Tawny, joined by my fabulous fellow curly-haired recovery icon, Ms. Lisa. Hello, my love.
Hello, my love. It's so good to see you.
How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. My favorite new author over here.
I wrote a book.
Okay. Yes.
Okay, so we're going to talk... not really talk about the book, but we are going to talk about the other things that I did while writing and promoting the book, because as we all know, showing up for others is one of the most important things that we can do for our recovery. And I would also say sober curiosity, because it gets you out of your head, and I think that's it. It gets you out of your head. And then once you're out of your head, you get all these other benefits. Would you agree?
Yeah, totally. I think one of the things, like when we talk about showing up for others, is to me, like it's such a big deal and was such a big deal from the beginning because I was so unable to show up before, you know, it was like, part of what I was after in early recovery was being what I thought of as quote unquote a normal person, right? Mm-hmm. Like a normal person who, if you know, like I wrote about in my book, when my sister-in-law was having my niece, I was trying to get to the hospital. It was the first grandchild for my parents, all this in New Jersey. It was just a quick ride over the George Washington Bridge. And I couldn't get there because I was using, and I was all the way in a car to go, you know, show up. And then my drug dealer called and I turned the car around. I had the car turn around. And, you know, so one of the big things that was appealing to me about getting and staying sober was that I could actually not be that asshole anymore.
Yeah. Right?
Like I could be the person who actually showed up in a way that someone, you know, who you would think cared and was, you know, with, and we'll talk about this a little bit with boundaries, but to be able to show up was a very big deal to me. And I saw that make a difference in, you know, the people that I cared about around me. I saw that they saw it too. So.
Yeah. And I think that's a really good point, because when I was not showing up for myself, I was not able to show up for the people that I cared about. And now that I am showing up for myself, I do show up for myself on a regular basis. So I am able to be a better friend, a better girlfriend, a better daughter, like all of these things. And like you said, with boundaries.
Yes. Yes. So what was that like for you while you were in the midst of book, you know, everything, craziness?
Yeah.
'Cause your life has been like on overload for as long as I can remember at this point.
It has. It's been a lot. You know, we moved at the beginning of the year. So it was an easy move. It was just into a larger apartment in the same building, but it was still moving. And that's really just, I feel like that really has been the vibe of the whole year is just moving. And and I'm so grateful to have a home office during this part of my life, Lisa. Having a place to go to just be by myself and work or cry or read, my meditation closet, when we say showing up for ourselves, this is how I'm showing up for myself now. You know, I prioritized having these spaces to take care of myself. And so when I do take care of myself, I am able to show up for others more. And so in specifics, I was in a wedding the weekend before Dry Humping came out. Me and Nick, our friends, were our couple's friends. We do, you know, a lot of double dates with them and they're good friends of ours. And their wedding was September 16th. And my book came out September 19th. And, you know, this is also an interesting lesson on boundaries. When they asked us to be bridesmaid and groomsmen, we, of course, said yes. And then when we learned the date, we were just like, we are excited to be there for you on the big day. And my book comes out 3 days after that. So I will not be available for the bridal shower, the bachelorette party. And any other stuff, I was like, but I'm 100% there for the wedding. And she was like, I got it. I understand. Thank you for letting me know. And that, I think the old me would have tried to be everywhere at once and then just went insane.
Yeah. I mean, that's absolutely true. And then inevitably in that insanity, you would have dropped balls, not shown up when you had committed, you know, all of these things. That was, now that you say that, it strikes another chord in this, is that it wasn't just about for me becoming a normal person. It was for me to stop disappointing other people.
Mm.
And a way to do that, what you did so brilliantly with how you handled that with your friend's wedding, was to set very clear expectations at the outset, right? So that it wasn't like, yeah, I can't wait. I'm so excited. It's close to my book launch, but it'll be good. And then have to be, first of all, stressed out all along the way about the shower, about the bachelorette, about all those things. And, you know, by managing that, you avoided that stress for yourself and you also avoided disappointing your friend.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what friend wouldn't say when somebody says, my book is coming out, it's going to be insane, I'm so there for the wedding, but I can't do this stuff before. What friend wouldn't be like, thank you, I'm so excited that you've got this book. You know,
And she's been supportive of, you know, asking how I'm doing. And like, we have these big things going on in our lives and we're able to show up for each other. And I will say showing up for her has helped me, like I said, get out of my own head. Like, yes, I wrote a book and it is the biggest thing to ever happen to me, you know, like,
yeah.
And the world still spins, life goes on, you know, other people have stuff going on too. So as stressful as it was to juggle the travel and the logistics and all of that, I think it was really great to be there for someone else the weekend before the book came out, because otherwise I would have just been on my phone, working my ass off, like doom scrolling, reading reviews. I would have just been probably not in a good headspace. And I told my publisher, I was just like, I'm unavailable for press these 2 days. I'm at a wedding. And that might sound crazy to anyone who's published a book to be like, I'm unavailable for press the 2 days before it comes out. But I made a commitment and I'm showing up for a friend and I can do press literally any other day.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's true. It's true. And it is, again, like that's managing expectations and setting up boundaries, right?
Exactly. And communicating with Caitlin, letting her know how I can support her, communicating with my publisher. Like, I would rather be really busy the week before than then because I can't do anything that Thursday and Friday. So letting them know in advance, they were able to adjust scheduling. And so, you know, it was stressful. Like I said, it's difficult, but I'm really grateful to have had that reminder of, like I said, life goes on. You're going to have friends and family who are also doing really big stuff, and you have to show up for them too. And, you know, and when I say you have to show up, it's not, I don't want anyone to hear that and be like, well, what if I don't want to? That's not what we're talking about.
Right. Exactly.
These are our dear friends, people we want to show up for. So that, I think that's an important distinction there. And, you know, Nick and I also have other entrepreneurial stuff going on that we will share at some point. Lisa and I also have another project we will share at one point. So it's not just book. There really is a lot of stuff going on right now. And I think showing up for my friends really, really helped me feel more balanced.
Oh, yeah. No, it's true. And you bring your toolkit to the actual showing up, right? It's a matter of if you're going to do it, you want to do it in a fully present way, right?
So I exactly. think,
yeah.
When you I carve- even... It's funny you say that because I even like when I emailed my publisher saying I'm unavailable the 14th and 15th, I wanted to say I'm unavailable for podcasts, but I can still, you know, answer questions over email. And I really wanted to just kind of be
in two. I totally can hear that.
To be in two places at once. And I was like, you're off. You are off work for 4 days. This is just how it's going to be. And you're going to deal with it and it's going to be fine.
And it's going to be fine. That's the thing. And like to make all the effort and make all the arrangements and, you know, to have that strong desire to show up and then to go do it. And then to spend that time stressing about what's out of your control right now, what's going on somewhere else, all of that would ruin it, you know? And that's when you bring your toolbox along to say, wait, where are my feet? I'm right here. I'm at this wedding. I'm with my friends. Everything is okay right now. And I'm in this moment, as opposed to standing there. I always found, at least, that for me, like when I've made clear that I'm not going to be somewhere, that I'm, you know, as we used to always say, out of pocket, at work and those kinds of things, that I had set it up so that I wouldn't have to be constantly thinking, is this thing going to come through? Is that thing going to come through? What's happening in the other space? It doesn't always work perfectly, you know?
Yeah.
Things can get interrupted. You know, things can certainly get put out of place. But one of the biggest things, instead of sitting there and freaking out about how am I going to go to this wedding when I've got the book coming out, is such, you removed that time waste you would have had stressing about it by handling it up front, right?
Like
you manage the things you can control. We know that, you know, anything could happen that prevents it actually, you actually being there for whatever reason. But the things that you could do, that you could control, you did.
I did. And I, like you said, I communicated and I set boundaries. And this is the first time that I've been a bridesmaid sober. And one of my dear, dear friends, Veronica, asked me to be a bridesmaid when I was newly sober. And I had to say no because I was newly sober. And you and I could just end it with a period there. You and I know what that means. But to me, that meant, oh my God, I don't know how to go to a wedding without alcohol, let alone be in a wedding and go to a bachelorette party and bride. Like, I don't know how to do any of that without alcohol. And I was only a few months sober, and she understood and she was very supportive. And even recently in the last year or so, I texted her and I was just, it was their anniversary. And I was just like, I really wish I could have been your bridesmaid, but thank you for understanding that I just couldn't be there like in that way. I still went to the wedding, but I just couldn't be a bridesmaid.
Yeah. Yeah.
And she totally understood. She got it. She was proud of me for advocating for myself. And like, that's a good friend. That is a,
yes.
You know, you and I often talk about how you find out who your real friends are when you get sober.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a good friend. She knew, she wanted me to be my healthiest version of myself. And if being in her wedding would have been a stressor, she didn't want that for me.
Exactly.
And that it, when you're loved like that, those are the people that you keep in your life.
Yeah. 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 And I think it is, you know, it's like you said, like doing all this stuff, you were being taken out of your comfort zone to show up right at the first wedding. I've told you about my first wedding that I had to go to, in Park City.
It's in my book.
Oh, right. Oh, share. Well, you can talk about what that section of the book is advising.
I mean, it's about the, I think you referred to it as like the ripping off the Band-Aid of your first time having sober sex.
Yeah, that wasn't part of the plan. That's just what ended up happening.
But it happened, and you could read all about it in Dry Humping.
Yes, I am quoted on it in Dry Humping. Yeah, I mean, it was one of those things I had to travel. I was celebrating. I hadn't been to a wedding. I had similarly, like you, kind of backed off some stuff. I didn't have anybody I had to say. I did actually. I did not attend one wedding because it was like, it was like 2 months in, and I just knew I was in full self-preservation mode at that point. And I think it did disappoint people, and I just had to be okay with that because I had to, you know, do what I needed to do in that moment. But yeah, about 1 year, it was the weekend of my 1 year anniversary, and I flew out to my friend Randy Joe's wedding in Park City. She's the friend I wrote about in the book who I went to Paris with in my first couple months of sobriety. And I had, just listening to you go through that whole thing, like, how do I go there? How do I put on like this, you know, I like bought myself, it was like a candy confection Betsy Johnson dress, right?
Yes.
I was like, I'm going to own it. And then it was time to put it on. I'm like, I'm going to seriously wear this thing. You know, it was a ridiculous dress. I loved it, but it was a crazy dress.
It's Betsy Johnson. I mean, yeah.
Yeah. And so I was like, how am I going to do this? And it was one of those things where it's like, you know, it was pulling off the band. At some point, I was going to have to go to a wedding sober. At some point, I was going to have to travel on my own, you know, to a wedding or to whatever sober and by myself. And I had done some sober travel, but yeah, when I got there, it's just like, okay, I'm here and I'm going to feel how I feel while I'm here. And then if I get uncomfortable, I can leave. Right. Like if something, I ended up not being uncomfortable and staying, and it was fine, but it was still like, I don't think either of us are in any way saying that showing up in sobriety is always easy, right? It's not necessarily easy to say to your friend, I'll be at the wedding, but I can't be anywhere else. It's not an easy thing, but it's, you know, it always brings me back to that, that saying that I like, which is that the hard thing and the right thing are often the same thing.
Yeah.
Right. And so that's, you know, and there's an acknowledgement, I think, that like your friends had that, like, hey, whoa, that was hard for me to imagine when it was on my own. Like, hey, whoa, you're going through a tough time. Let me support you.
Yeah.
Right? It's one of those things where it can be hard to, I think I'm delivering something that people are going to be mad about. And actually they're very much like, wait, whoa, I wouldn't want to put your, you know, sobriety in jeopardy in any way.
And I don't think people really realize what it means to say no to something or to say no to showing up for someone because you have to self-preserve. I don't. And that people who don't really know what that means might think that it sounds selfish or they just don't get it. But this is what we're talking about. Like, those early stages are really, really hard, and you have to take care of yourself. Yeah. And learning how to disappoint people is a pretty is a lesson you earn pretty early on in recovery.
Yeah. No is a complete sentence.
No is a complete sentence. And it's also like, okay, maybe you'll disappoint someone by not going to this wedding. But like, how will they feel if you relapse and die? They probably wouldn't like that
good
either.
Point. Yeah. So. No, they don't want you. And they're very, I found people were very quick to tell me they didn't want me to be, you know, in some sort of position that I didn't want to be in.
No, exactly. And that goes for a birthday or a baby shower, whatever, any situation that you don't feel ready to do, don't do it.
Yeah.
But if you do feel ready to do it, it can be a really, really magical way to show up for someone because you love them. And also it's going to get you out of your head, you know, and even just if I get all caught up in my own shit, just texting you or talking to Nick, just talking to someone else about what they're dealing with always makes me feel better because I'm reminded it's not just me here. Still working through a lot of my only child syndrome. But and real quick, before we go into the music minute, I want to tell you about how my puppy has also been.
I was just going to say, I mean, you've been through a broken foot, a broken toe.
Yeah, that's true. I also had a broken
stuff, like talk about showing up for Stevie Nicks.
That's so I forgot about the broken toe. Yeah. So moved in January. In March, it was a year since we had put our dog Clara down, and we just after a year, we felt ready to get another dog, and Nick and I were just like, okay, you know, you're talking about me, like you work from home, and he works, you know, he is all over the place with his jobs, so he's like, okay, if we get another dog, it's going to be predominantly your responsibility. Are you okay with that? And I was like, yes, let's do it. Didn't think we were going to get a puppy, but we found the perfect dog, and we fell head over heels in love with this puppy that we named Stevie after Stevie Nicks. And what happens 2 weeks after we adopt Stevie, I break my toe. So that was just, yeah, that was a whole other thing. But I was rocking my boot. I was rocking my scooter. I was still taking this dog out.
And you weren't complaining. I was waiting for the complaints. I didn't hear them.
I mean, I definitely had some meltdowns. And I asked for help. For help. One of my good friends, Mara, is also my neighbor. She lives in my building. She helped out a lot with Stevie. Other friends helped out. And then I hired a dog walker. I was like, this is just where I am right now. I don't have my full ability. So this is just what it is. But all of that aside, having Stevie and, you know, training a puppy, adding all of this to my plate during one of the busiest seasons of my life probably was a crazy thing to do. But we wanted another dog, and like, when else were we going to have the time to train another dog? This really was the time to do it. And when she wants to go out, or when I take her to the dog park, anything like that, like I would at first get frustrated because I'm like, oh, I'm busy. I'm doing this. I don't want to take this puppy out. But then we would go to the dog park, and she's just like the friendliest dog and plays with every human, plays with every dog. And she is just so happy. And it gets me out of my head, gets me out of my apartment. And I'm just playing with puppies in a dog park. I mean, like, it's really hard to be grumpy when you're playing with puppies.
Yeah.
So it's just been so, so great. And Stevie has been a much needed reminder for Nick and I to play. And like Nick and I will literally get on the ground in our living room, crawling around with Stevie playing. And we would have never done that without her, you know? And it just, she reminds us that there's so much more to life
than work. And yeah. we just, and I will say every single day she reminds me to play. And I did not think that that was a lesson that I needed. And I'm so grateful that I got that from her.
I love that so much. And there is no not being in the moment when you're taking care of a puppy.
That is such a good point. I mean, training a puppy, potty training, leash training, it's a lot of work. And, you know, Amanda White, who's been on our podcast, and she wrote a book called Not Drinking Tonight. She just had a baby. And on her podcast, she talked about how parenting has helped her right size her career ambition. She put so much on her career. And I was listening to the podcast and I was like, why do I relate to this from adopting a puppy? You know, like this, I was like, I didn't have those words, but that's what it is. Like raising a puppy has right sized my career ambition. It reminds me that there is more than just accomplishing a whole bunch of shit. I need to be present and I need to be silly and lighthearted and have fun.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, that's just a genius example of what showing up can do, right?
Yeah.
Like you know, you guys knew that having a dog was going to be important to you once you had enough time pass after Clara's passing. And when the time is right and when you saw the spot, like, hey, I'm working from home right now, whatever, now's the time to do it. You took it, despite the fact that it was gonna, you know, add a lot to it. And then it ends up being like this, in addition, yeah, it made things harder in a lot of ways, but it added so much, you know, the positive that it brought in terms of keeping you present, giving you time to play, like reminding you that it's not all about work. This was like the most important time that you needed to be reminded that it's not all about work. And because you could have become just fully engulfed in all of that.
And you know, I would have.
Yeah.
I would have.
I did. Yeah. Yeah.
I think another thing that I'm really grateful for about adopting Stevie is I've become such a dog park mom, Lisa. I have a fanny pack full of treats and poop bags. And I go to the dog park like 2-3 times a day. I mean, she's a puppy. She needs an extreme amount of exercise.
And you have the dog park right behind her.
Yes, I'm very grateful. There's a dog park on our block. It could not be more convenient. And I go to this dog park and most of the people that I interact with several times a day there have no idea. We don't talk about work. We don't talk about the news. It's just like this place where all of these adults come together. We watch our dogs play. Yeah. We talk about our dogs. But most of the people that I see on a daily basis at the park have no idea that I wrote a book or what I do for a living. And sure. I don't know what they do. And I love that.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Yeah, that is fantastic. So great. So tell me, what do you think music-wise? What's your music minute for this idea of showing up?
I mean, I just keep thinking about friendships because of the first part of this episode and
Friends theme, like I'll be there for you.
Oh, I love that. Do you remember how fucking huge that song was?
Yes,
like the Rembrandts, the music video, Jennifer Aniston with no bra on drums. Very vividly remember that. I mean, that is a total 90s moment. That music video, that song was everywhere.
Yeah. The other one I thought of that is that it just kind of sparked me in my head, and I don't know. You know what is the Go-Go song, Get Up and Go.
Yeah.
I don't know if you know that one, but that was like very, that's just like a, you know, let's go. You're tired of moving slow, get up and go. And it's very boppy. And, you know, that's kind of the vibe that I felt like I had to bring to things like going to my friend's wedding when I was terrified, you know, sometimes it's just go, you know. Like
and you can always leave. You can go. And then if you're not happy, then you can go home.
Yes. Yes. I have rented a car in Park City so that I could drive myself to the weddings, even though there was a way to get there without it, because I wanted control over when I could leave.
Now that's a really good point.
Of course, I ended up sleeping somewhere entirely different that night, but you know, it was all good intentions.
And listener, if that is interesting to you, you can read all about it in Dry Humping, A Guide to Dating, Relating, and Hooking Up Without the Booze.
It was the story I wanted to end my book with. But
it's a good story.
Like, it's too far out, you know, because it was a year later and I left off at like 4 months or something. And they were like, this is a New York book. We can't have it ending, you know,
in Utah.
Yeah. So,
and that's fair. I think it was just meant to be told in my book.
I think it was, because it does work rather well.
It works well in there.
I do make a point others weren't making.
Yes.
Took the Band-Aid off.
There's so many ways to approach sober firsts, and yes, I think you nailed it, pun intended.
Yeah. So, okay. Well, this was a good discussion.
I'm glad that
we're, you know, as usual, on the same page about this stuff. So
show up for your friends, show up for yourself, and self-preserve if communicate. If you can't show up, that's okay. But
that's,
you know,
fine.
You got to communicate it.
Yeah. Great.
And set boundaries.
Always
set boundaries. I love you so much.
I love you so much.
And we love you.
Yes.
And you have a wonderful rest of your week. We'll see you next Friday.
Thanks for listening. We hope you like what you heard. If so, please hit subscribe and consider rating and reviewing us so others can find us. Tawny, how can our listeners find you?
You can find me at Tawny M. Lara on all of the social medias. You can find my blog, sobrietyparty.com. Lisa, how can we find you and your amazing book?
My book is Girl Walks Out of a Bar, and it is available at bookstores everywhere and online. And you can find me at lisasmithadvisory.com. And I'm on social media at Girl Walks Out. Thanks for listening.